This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
February 10th. My computer is going crazy. My Skype went down right before the program. A bunch of other programs decided to go down. Anyway, it's February the 10th, 2018. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I encourage you to visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and BullyesBlog.blogspot.com and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@Spingola.email. Visit our friendly chat room at Spingola.chatango.com. View our guest lineup at Spingola.com. And in addition to the links for each of the guests, you will find other interesting links that are relative to the guest and his or her subject. My guest, the first half of the program today, is Chris from near Las Vegas. So, Chris, you've called into my program over the years. I've heard you call into other programs. And I know that you're never at a loss for words. So... So, but let me ask you a few questions first. But I'm going to let you do most of the talking. I have been sick. I had a cold, a fever, and all the other crud that's going around. Anyway, you live near Las Vegas. What is your business? I know that you have a great deal of interest in a lot of things, but what specifically do you do?
Well, that's an intriguing and a rather complex question you asked. I've done a multitude, if you will, of different activities in my life, not the least of which a significant portion of it was dedicated to law enforcement as a public servant amongst several different law enforcement organizations around the nation, including the Lawton, Oklahoma Police Department, 546 Police, Military Police attached to CID, Criminal Investigation Division, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, prior to Lawton. I then went to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department as a patrol officer for a bit while I was going through their academy. And just prior to leaving their academy, although I had completed their post, Police Officer Standardized Testing Program, I received an offer because I had a large family at the time, 5 children in Las Vegas, and was not making enough money to feed my family. And I got an offer from the Nevada State Gaming Control Board's Enforcement Division to go to work for them as an enforcement agent, policing the gaming activities here in Nevada to ensure that the people that would come to visit our state would have at least a fair shot in most cases, although we do know that the odds are fairly substantially stacked against them, there is still the potentiality for somebody to win substantial amounts of money, sometimes by chance and other times with interventions by people who are operating the games or the contests that they purport are going to be open, fair, and totally just a game of chance whatsoever. But this sometimes is and sometimes is not the case. I've also retired from the IBEW 357, and I was politically assassinated because I had uncovered criminality in the local.
No. Case. Criminals in the political system there? That's just hardly believable. I'm being facetious, you know.
Well, when you're a law enforcement professional for a substantial part of your life, you take college courses, and each different entity that you work for always offers extensive training, education, indoctrination, programming, and teaching of their policy, statutes, codes, procedures, and how they expect you to conduct yourself as a public servant, supposedly. Many people don't understand the complex nature that's confusedly devised when they set up these councils or county commissions or other governing bodies. They give you the illusion that there are three separated branches of government, separation of powers as we know it generally, and they'll line up different organizations. Usually the executive branch has the law enforcement and maybe the courts of the judicial branch. And, of course, then it's an illusion because where they are combined, unified, is the Board of Commissioners. Sometimes they'll insert a county manager or some other office in between to give them the illusion that they're separated from it. But truly, the County Board of Commissioners issues the checks, they pay the bills, they take in all the revenue or revenue, moving it from the people's pocket into taxation and fines and thefts to the pockets of the county commission. And then they pay all their employees, their agents, and their lucrative funds, usually very much above what people make in the private sector, so they can allege them or connect them to their authority, and they keep their positions as long as they keep the county commissioners happy, subject to the county commission, is the language that's frequently employed in their employment contracts. And so I've worked in multi-states as a service rep for Castle Cybron Company, servicing sterilizers. I've built tires. I've sold sewing machines and vacuum cleaners for Montgomery Wards. I've worked at amusement parks in my life early on, movie theaters. I've had a real...
You had a paper route too, right?
Absolutely. When I was doing it right now. Everybody,
you don't need to go back that far.
I didn't know you'd been delving into my background so deeply.
I'm just being funny, or attempting to be funny.
You were hilarious. I was being funny right back at you.
Oh, goodness. I feel like I've lost 10 days of my life. Anyway, so you sent me some information after I had a guest on the program talking about the situation in Colorado and the situation with eminent domain, and I found it just very, very interesting. You sent a lot of things, and this was for the guest that I had on, Norman, who was a guest on the program, who wrote a wonderful book, and they do have quite a serious situation in Colorado that is ongoing, and of course it's really to not only to seize property, but to destroy what remains of the independent cattle producers in this country, so that the big four can take over. And I learned a lot of things. First of all, reading The Meat Racket, which is a very interesting book, one that that a guest had recommended that I read, and I did. Well, Bill Bullard had recommended that book, which I read, and I was just dumbfounded because I knew that factory farming existed. I knew that it was awful. I knew that it was terrible for the animals, that it was terrible for the people who were running the factory farms. But most of all, I think the treatment of the animals and the chickens and turkeys I found so offensive and so inhumane. But I never realized who started this and who was behind it until I read The Meat Racket and talked with Bill Bullard, and who is mentioned in that book. And it's a very comprehensive read, and I recommend that every consumer should actually read this book. But anyway, you sent me all of these links about eminent domain, which I found to be very interesting. So that's why I asked you to be on the program, and maybe you could go over some of these things that you sent. There are ways that people can prevent property from being taken, but people don't know what they don't know, and they often become victims of government abuse. Imagine that, right?
Imagine that. Well, actually, tyranny is precisely what the government does to the people. And said, when the government fears the people, we have liberty.
Sure.
In fact, the eminent domain derives from the so-called Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, which says, relates to self-incrimination, double jeopardy, due process. It says, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. If any city or county wants to regulate, this is a postscript, if any city or county wants to regulate, restrict, or eliminate any private property, it must pay for it out of its general fund. Regulations and restrictions are takings and must be compensated. This is very, very important, and this is, you know, a lot of people, they don't clearly grasp the clear meaning of due process of law and self-incrimination and being deprived of life, liberty, or property. I made the case and suggested to Jeanette Finnicum, the widow of Lavoie Finnicum, who was egregiously murdered on the side of the road along with several other people in the same truck on the way to Malheur Wildlife Refuge up to Grants Pass, Oregon. And I pointed out to Jeanette that she was being run on the hamster wheel of the administrative procedures process because she was dealing with the Bureau of Land Management. agency and other entities, the state of Oregon, the FBI, which is an agency under the Administrative Procedures Act. And they get you on that hamster wheel there, and it's very difficult and particularly expensive for common people to try to fight these agencies because they've got their own private corporate policies, procedures, and rules that you have to adhere to if you're one of their employees or a U.S. citizen, that being a subservient classification in existence under the Constitution, under the so-called 14th or Red Amendment, where they created the small c federal citizen. And the federal citizen is actually a form of subject or slave, subject to the plenary dictatorial or tyrannical powers of Congress in that particular capacity, of which other sovereigns in the world, those that have the ability to self-rule or regulate and control, rule their property, cattle, chattel, residence, individuals, or things. And so it's a very convoluted situation that's difficult for most people because we're not taught these things in our public pool school system. We're indoctrinated, programmed, and of course I know you've had, I think, Charlotte Iserbeat on, Dumbing Down of America, and effectually we've all been dumbed down and perhaps indoctrinated and taught falsities.
Absolutely.
Sure, and, you know, they want us stupid slaves or not informed, schooled, educated slaves are much easier to control and demonize or dominate, if you like that better, than those who think for themselves, that are taught how to think, how to apply cognitive thinking and questioning and actual research, like you do, to verify. And I like the way Laurie Anderson describes it, watch your back and check your facts. I think that's what you do, and many of your contributors on your show do also.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard a guest on this show talking about his plight in Colorado, similar to the plight that I've been drug into through no fault of my own by being victimized by terrorism by government and unlawful takings. And whenever they take any type of property, it could be intellectual property, it could be your land, it could be your private home effects, it could be your children, it could be gold and silver, it could be destroying your family. These are forms of takings or eminent domain. And let me give a salute to the assimilator of this compendium of information that I sent to you. It may or may not be on your website or whatever. It used to be up on the web that anybody could find, and it was Abuse of Eminent Domain by Matthew Bender of Matthew Bender Law. He's the professor emeritus of the law school at UC Santa Barbara, I think is where he's located. I don't know for sure if he's still there, but he was at the time he wrote this. And he had this primer, as they call it, and compendium of a collection of cases of Supreme Court and other mostly Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decisions and a few others. But I basically focused on the Supreme Court decisions, which I think there were 13 of them that I found to be appertaining to the case that I have been regrettably involved in. And, you know, the amount of treachery, brinksmanship is a word term that I learned in my studies of this, in defending myself, which is the most abusive, forceful, egregious form of getting someone to comply or die to whatever it is you're trying to direct them to. It was created by, I think, Alan Dulles, the founder of the CIA here in America.
Infamous Alan Dulles.
Yeah, the Dulles brothers, yeah, really stoic Americans, contributed a lot to our country in the deep state,
sure
the dark
did.
State. And we're still dealing with the fallout from this criminal organization. In fact, Eustace Mullins in his book, The Rape of Justice, I think describes the CIA as the communist infiltration of America.
Mm-hmm. Which I think happened much earlier than even most people anticipate. Okay, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna And our guest, the first half of the program today, is Chris from near Las Vegas. And we are talking about quite a wonderful document that I will put up on the schedule page so that other people can see it. And he sent this document to me. It actually was created by Matthew Bender. It's a primer on eminent domain. And he sent it to me after my guest, Norman, had talked about the taking of land in Colorado. And then you also mentioned the taking of gold. And, of course, when you said that, I thought about 1933 and the confiscation of gold. And it's always for the well, it's not always, but they tell us it's for a noble reason, that it's a necessary thing. There's always some justification that people sometimes accept, often accept, actually. But people in Colorado aren't buying it. They've been there for a long time. And
learned a very interesting new word last night from a group that I was meeting with. And I had not heard this word, but it was one that was created by C.S. Lewis. And the word was verbicide. And it could also be wordicide, where they murder you with your words or the twisting of the words into other terms, which is what attorneys do. We recently had the Bundy case here in Las Vegas, where Gloria Navarro, after abusing her discretion egregiously for quite a long time, had a dramatic, radical shift in her position and had to find a flagrant abuse of prosecutorial discretion and dismiss the case against the Bundys with extreme prejudice, although they left out the term extreme, but anytime they say with prejudice, it means extreme prejudice, which means it's beyond the pale, outside the scope and sphere of what normal prosecutions would be allowed to do. And they did this because they hid inculpatory or incriminating evidence for over 2 years while they kept these patriots, these lovers of America, this strong family spiritual unit, incarcerated. And that's also an abuse of the Speedy Trial Act, although they may have tricked some of them into waiving that or done other scurrilous tricks like having the attorneys waive it for them without their consent or acquiescence. But these things are so very important because when you take a person's life, and there's a case called Trezvant versus the city of Tampa Bay, Florida, where Mr. Trezvant was arrested, had the money on his person to bond himself out, but was not taken immediately before a magistrate to have his case properly adjudicated and be able to post bond and to free himself. And he was locked up for 23 minutes and rewarded, I think, in the courts after the fact for unlawful incarceration and denial of his due process of law, and compensated the amount of, I think it was $27,000 for 23 minutes. And when you do the math and count that out, that works out to about $1.5 million a day for unlawful incarceration, although I'm told that there may have been a further court review of that with political activist judiciary, playing their political antics and agendas of trying to ameliorate the liability for the counties for their unlawful takings of his freedom and liberties and reduce that somewhat. But still, nevertheless, even in this first case they list, which is Monterey versus Del Monte Dunes at 526 U.S. 143, Lawyers Edition, LED, 2D882, 119, Supreme Court, 1999. In that case, it says the district court's jury instructions directed the jury that it should find for the landowner if the jury found that a landowner had been denied all economically viable use of its property, or B, if the city's decision did not substantially advance a legitimate public purpose. The jury awarded the landowner $8 million for the takings and $1.45 million for the city's unlawful acts and no just compensation or providing adequate post deprivation remedy for the loss. The county is liable for any city employee violating the taking clause amendment by
Okay, we're going to do a quick 3 minute break. We'll be right back. Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest for staff of the program is Chris from near Las Vegas. And I was, I've talked to some other people recently who had family that was in the lumbering business, particularly in Washington, Oregon, Northern California. And what the loggers did was that they took care of the land that they were logging in. If there was any, they had a fire crew, they had fire crews so that they would take care of any potential fires that erupted in their area where they were logging. And the ranchers do the same thing. If they were given land, not given, but if they were allowed to graze their cattle on public land, then they were also taking care of the land, and they would protect that land from the same kind of situation, such as a fire. And then when you take logging out of the hands of the people that had been in that business for a long time, then you also took away the protection against fire in that area. And the same thing occurred in Colorado, where you had a lot of fire. So how can you relate that to the Bundys? Because I really didn't look into that situation. I didn't research it, but from what I did gather, it was a situation where they had been grazing their cattle on this land for decades, and then all of a sudden, the Bureau of Land Management came along and said, "Oh, you can't do that anymore." And a lot of times, it's because that land has resources that the federal government wants to hand over to some of their buddies. They want to privatize public land for the profitability that is associated with it. Your views on that?
Intriguing that you should bring this up and make that relationship, because it's actually playing out as we're speaking right now in the FISA court examinations, the Christopher Steele dossier, where he contrived this false narrative, this fictitious story to try to incriminate Trump and cover up the complicity for Hillary Clinton, or Hillary Clinton as I prefer to call her, and some of her entourage, Bill, and of course the infamous tarmac meeting between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton in the middle of the night, like two ships just coincidentally passing the night. Of course, they were ordered not to have any press there to document it, to keep the criminality of the conspiratory of covering up the crime and so on and so forth from the public to know. And we know that Harry Reid had a very substantial hand with his associate Neil Kornsey, who was appointed to the head of the BLM. And I think the guy's name was Wu, that was in charge of the Department of Interior. The BLM is beneath the Department of Interior. You mentioned the Rangers. There's a really entertaining but far too true representation of some of the atrocities perpetrated against landowners by the Park Service, which is akin or similar to the Bureau of Land Management, called Big Park. And you can search that out on YouTube. And it's only a few minutes long, and I think it will import a very similar situation to what the Bundys and the people up in Oregon, the Hammonds, who were under double jeopardy, were re-prosecuted because the first judge set them free. He could not bring himself to incarcerating the man for setting a backfire which is a sustainable and a common form of taking a proactive act to protect life, limb, and property from the dangers of fire. And they had set one to control and burn just a few acres of BLM land, you know, whenever you've got winds that are swirling around and moving fires. You don't always have full control, although the preservation of life and property is preeminent to keep the animals and the people from being burned up and murdered or killed by the fires. And in some cases, the BLM set these fires themselves, or the rangers do, in order to supposedly to protect from future worse fires. And then they're so surprised when the winds come up and change direction, they get out of control and burn thousands of acres. And then, of course, they exonerate themselves from liability, but the Hammonds, for burning just a few acres, less than 100 as I recall, were retried and held accountable, and I think they're in prison to this day.
Although, oh, my gosh.
That the Bundy situation, they just had a case here in Las Vegas on the 8th on a couple of the other Bundys that are still in the system that weren't in the original group that was held whenever Glory and Navarro dismissed with prejudice for flagrant prosecutorial abuse of discretion the charges. And Clive and Bundy, the patriarch of the family, over 70 years old, walked out of 333 Las Vegas Boulevard a free man with a button on his chest that said, "Free at last." And it was a great, I was actually there on that front door area, the patio outside the federal courthouse there, and got to witness that myself along with many other American freedom, liberty-loving patriots that were there and alternative news people that were in association, and to see the smiles on the faces of the children, to see Grandpa and Great-Grandpa holding multiple of those children and them wanting to know if they were going to take him on a horsey ride and things of that nature. It was really emboldening, and it was a great day for freedom, liberty, and private land ownership and property rights and water rights here in America that day, because it rebuked the horrific actions, the targeting of individuals, the keeping a kill book, a kill list, having targets with their names and pictures of X's on the wall in Daniel P. Love's office. These takings under these agencies' actions, these agencies are under the Administrative Procedures Act, the so-called headless fourth branch of government by Colonel Edwin Mandel House, or Hauser, and his treatise or little booklet he wrote, Philip Drew, Administrator, and putting forth his imaginative novel ideas of ruling by agency action and the corporatocratic model, an oligarchy, basically a monopoly of corporations holding up power over America to rule by executive edict, because they are all under the executive powers of the POTUS as either the CFO, the CEO, the Chief Financial Officer, Chief Executive Officer, or the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces under the Emergency War Powers Act.
Right.
And these are very, very dangerous concepts, because agency actors, they don't operate under law. They're not bound by the change of the Constitution. They have their own private foreign corporate policies, statutes, codes, and procedures they operate under, and therefore they are incompetent. They are without knowledge of law, and they frequently break the law and evade things and or avoid them, or cognitively dissonant. They don't pay any attention to things like trespass acts, need for a warrant to search or seize, whether they have a lawful right to trespass on somebody's property, what a true exigent circumstance or emergency circumstance is that qualify coming onto someone's property without a warrant. These are things that they're never schooled in, and usually they operate under various guises of agency or county action. A lot of times the county administrators, the city council, the town council will appoint these agencies, and they operate under the law of agency, which states notice to agent is notice to principal is notice to agent. And so there's a case called Fessler versus Rollins, R-E-W-L-I-N-S, F-E-S-S-L-E-R, California case, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that tells you that the agent can't speak for the principal, and the principal can't speak for the agent, because they both have financial, fiduciary, and other self-interest, and protecting one another's is a mutual codependent relationship that prevents them from being neutral, unbiased, or fair in any adjudication of any matter whatsoever.
Right.
It's all
part of corporatocracy.
Absolutely. Right. A corporatocracy. That's exactly right. Ruled by corporate kleptocrats, government by criminals masquerading as corporations, mm-hmm. because they have that air of immunity by the corporate shield of immunity to protect the people who actually operate the corporation. But that does not protect the agents or actors working for them. And when they show disfeasance or malfeasance, failure to be due diligent and to properly train and instruct, and you can prove a pattern, practice, and custom, that type of bad behavior, not properly teaching their clients or their employees, then they become culpable, liable, and suitable for their bad faith acts. And that's exactly what the Supreme Court says in these decisions, in this treatise I sent you. Here's the second one on there. It's Burns versus Reed, R-E-E-D, 500 U.S. 478 to 486, 111 Supreme Court, 1934, 114 Lawyers Edition 2D, 547 and 1991. The law requires the official seeking immunity to bear the burden of demonstrating that the immunity attaches to a particular function. County or city employees could not bear the burden of demonstrating that sabotage, terrorism, extortion, theft under color of law, discrimination, racketeering, violation of due process, and takings without compensation attaches to their particular function of upholding the Constitution and protecting the property rights of taxpaying citizens and property owners. Therefore, the county would not be immune either for conduct of criminals posing as city or county employees. I must give a caveat emptor, a warning to people, that this information was deemed to be so dangerous that I was locked up for 30 days in Lakes Crossing Center by the county commission.
You were?
And there, yes, ma'am, I was. I had to prove my competency. Of course, competency is a void for vagary word term that has no meaning. It's all subjective and interpretive from the eyes of the accuser or the abuser. And when I served the county and its agents, the district attorney's office, the police department, and the so-called professional public response office zoning agents with a notice of Title 42, 1983 Bivens action. And the very next day I had to appear in the court where it turns out, I know this will surprise you, the chief district attorney here in Las Vegas, or Clark County, Steve Wolfson, his wife, Jackie Wolfson Glass, was the chief Eighth Circuit District Specialty Competency Court judge.
What a coincidence.
And they brought in a hit woman who, Nancy Becker, who is a supposed retired pro temper special woman judge brought back for my case, unleashed six of her goons that they pose as marshals in her court, her hitmen, to violently attack me without any physical provocation whatsoever, because I had the audacity to cite law, facts, and evidence from the Supreme Court verbatim, word for word, discounting their so-called psychology, psychiatry, and mental health schemes, and trying to prove my competency, which, of course, like I say, is doctrine of void for vagues, because it's not definable. And I cited Federal Rules of Evidence 702. That's the same area code here at Las Vegas, so it's easy to recall, which has to do with qualification of an expert witness in the federal courts for evidentiary purposes, and requires for any evidence to be considered such, whether it's medical or science or whatever else, it must be observable, measurable, and repeatable to be considered as evidence. And none of the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Symptoms Manual for the so-called psychology-psychiatry trade, has any relation to those concepts, because it's all subjective, interpretive,
right,
and that cannot, and it's influenced by the financial interest of the psychiatrist, the psychologist, or the mental care, because they all get compensations from the people who
right.
place people there for evaluations. Therefore, they're not neutral, unbiased, but they have serious financial interest, sometimes trips and other perks or kickbacks and compensation schemes for taking care of these so-called mental incompetent people, like they've accused Trump of being, without any factual basis other than their own hypothecated legal theories that are not substantiated by any factual or evidence, but they serve the political interest, they serve the political interest and agendas of his adversaries who want to color him in the most advantageous, legally predatory light of their theories.
Right.
Well,
what you're saying, actually saying is that there's a great big difference between a fact and a truth, which sometimes people kind of interchange. A truth is something, if you believe it, then it's true, even if it isn't a fact. If you believe that a certain church is true, whether it be a cult religion or whatever, if you believe that it's true, then it's true, but that doesn't make it factual. So, but with the DSM, that's all, they say that those are truths, but as you said, they're subjective and certainly couldn't be held up on a scientific basis or a factual basis.
In fact, the case that it's predicated upon is GE Incorporated versus Merrill Dow Pharmaceutical Incorporated, and those three qualifiers, observability, measurability, and repeatability, are set forth as the Daubert, D-A-U-B-E-R-T, analysis. That's the three-prong test we were talking about under Federal 702. It has a progeny case, an offspring, a baby that came from the first case called Kumho, K-U-M-H-O, Tire Company Incorporation versus Carmichael, where the Supreme Court said, very clearly, not me, the Supreme Court said this, that psychology, psychiatry, and the so-called mental health sciences are mere pseudoscience, or as they colorfully termed, witch doctorage, and therefore could not rise to the evidentiary contributions for the expert witness classification to be considered as evidentiary in the federal courts. And this is, there's another treatise on the internet that people can search out and read for themselves called Psychopolitical Warfare by Kenneth Goff, B-O-F. I hear the music.
All right, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Alrighty, we are back, and our guest, the first part of the program today, is Chris from Las Vegas, and it's just all very interesting, all of this, all of these things that have gone on. They've been incremental since after the so-called Civil War, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, incrementally. But that's when corporatocracy really took off, is during the so-called Civil War, what I call the Marxist Revolution, the first successful Marxist Revolution.
Can't argue with it. It might even be the first Bolshevik Revolution.
Well, that, yes, but what I mean Marxist is they were not successful in Europe. So in 1848, so a lot of the Marxists came over here and fought in the so-called Civil War on the North and established here in this country what they failed to do in Europe.
Well, they're pretty persistent, this group of people who want to be the rulers of the they don't quit. They just form and readdress and attack from a different position.
Certainly.
As I was telling you, this is really, really very dangerous information. And, you know, I've obviously been a targeted individual and been attacked by about every weapon they have here, for including this type of interest. They've tried to bury it. This political activist, Saul Alinskyite, Ninth Circuit Court here has aided and abetted covering up the criminality here in Las Vegas. And I would argue also in Malheur and up at the Bundy Ranch. And I mean, we've had the Western lands have been under attack by agents of government trying to seize it and convert it to their own private purposes for many, many years. We can go back to Bruce Babbitt, who was the Secretary of the Interior.
Right.
They converted most of the national parks into what was called the Nature Conservancy Act, which basically they claimed all their interest in significant portions of public land, so-called, to foreign interests, and lined their own pockets, although they kept a cursory aspect of lands for use under a limited and very defined segment of usage, to basically insulate themselves and give themselves a carve-out and considerable tax write-offs, theft by deception, using the donation of lands to line their own pockets and to exonerate themselves from tax implications for huge amounts of money, which basically was stealing from the American people, the tax, so-called taxpayers, and everybody else in this country, and lining their own self-interested pockets.
And if you look at the people on the board of directors of the Nature Conservancy, it will not surprise you if you're well aware of things that are going on. It's a very corrupt entity, and people should not give money to the Nature Conservancy. They say all kinds of good things, but it's just not the case. They are a front group for evil doings.
Those lands of the Bundys up there, you alluded to it a little earlier. When we look into what's going on today with this FISA court situation and Hillary and Obama and Harry Reid and some of these other bad actors, they had sold over 20% of America's uranium stockpiles, which is military-grade uranium, to the Russians.
Right.
On self-interest. The lands there were supposedly set forth for a solar project to be built by the Chinese, which was really a cover story. They built that off-ramp exchange, that interstate off-ramp there where the Bundy Ranch is, many, many years ago. So this has been a long-term plan that's been in effect. I don't think it goes back any further than Harry Reid's been in office. Obviously, very strong influence there. But they had precise military interest of placing the communist Chinese within that area of Nevada up against the mountains, so they had a fairly physical obstruction from anybody coming from behind, but they had good access north and south and east and west from that location in a very tactically advantageous location. And so these are very, very dangerous times where use begins.
Oh, my goodness. We're at the top of the hour. Time goes by fast when you're having a good time. Okay, we will be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. Our guest, the first part of the program today, is Chris from near Las Vegas. And I do have an email question for you, a couple of questions. When did you finally separate from your law enforcement career? Number one question.
When did I cease that?
When did you leave that career?
I think that was around 86. I don't have a clear recollection of the date. It's not something I have cemented in my long-term memory. I'm not trying to be deceitful. I just don't recall exactly. But it was around that time, and I left that, and I dabbled with cars. I'd sold a Mustang and saw a guy that was working in the electrical union's check, and that's what promoted me to seek. I'd always been less interested in electricity, doing HO scale cars and electric trains and things of that nature when I was a child. It was pretty easy to gravitate towards that interest because they were making very good money for working men, blue collar jobs, when I left the union, because I was drummed out for finding corruption here. We were making $40 an hour plus benefits at that time. Pretty good money. A hide-and-go-seek was in a week.
Right. Okay. In the 90s, did you ever become aware of the COPS, COPS, or COMPASS, or ABCD programs, among countless many others, as being unconstitutional?
It actually wasn't in the 90s. Long around 2000 is when I really woke up. Now, I did back in the 60s when I was in high school, and I went to a law day program in Oklahoma City and got abused by a police officer on duty, a pretty large slug of a guy, for doing nothing but just hanging out, and we weren't smoking pot or drunk or any of that nature. We were just waiting for the band to come out the back of the convention center there. And we got kind of pushed around, roughed up, and treated badly. And I thought, well, you know, I could either do nothing and it would continue and make place for more of this type, or I could be proactive and try to do something and try to be a better public servant to guard, protect, and defend others against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and abuse of discretion like I had been victimized by. And so that's what kind of propelled me to get into law enforcement at that time. And so that would have been 1968, 69. I was kind of a long hair back then, and I was invited to Black Panther meetings and SDS, Students for Democratic Society, other socialist communist things that we didn't know at that time they were. We thought they were, you know, right to reject the man and power to the people and all those great epitaphs that we were told, those mimetics that we repeated over and over. This is how they indoctrinate us, inculcate us, and trick us into these left-wing extreme agendas. We see it manifested today. We're told it's Antifa. In my estimation, and from what I'm able to discern, these are really fascists disguised as anti-fascist, or Antifa. Anti-fascist is what it really, which are George Soros-funded groups, Move On, Occupy, Tides Foundation, and others, SEIU. And they basically are community organizers that come in and provide controlled opposition, both sides of the fray, to give the illusion there are real problems. And what they're trying to do is provoke and induce others to come along that might have some sympathy with one side or the other to create chaos, confusion, crisis, and revolution. They really want revolution in this current country, from what I've observed. They've done about everything they can to try to poke Americans in the eye, to offend our sense of decency, moral scruples. Our culture is under attack. It is a war, an amorphic or shapeless war that we're not used to seeing. And because they're not shooting, running tanks on the streets mostly, although they do have MRAPs and helicopters and surveillance equipment and military clothes, there's
focus centers and all kinds of things.
Fuse ion centers, yeah. It's all militarization of America. And most people, they know something's wrong. They just haven't put the pieces together, except for a large group of them here on Republic and like Truth Media Network stations, where we actually educate ourselves and try to study and learn the habits of those who would take over this country through strategic means of communism and Talmudism and Zionism and other cult-worshipping groups of socialist communists.
Right. Now, this question is very similar to something that you've already said. Were you told the militarization of the nation's law enforcement capabilities was somehow good for the community when you were in law enforcement?
Remember, I was back in actually.
Right, and you got out in 86. But
yeah, from 73 to 86 was when my engagement was. And we hadn't made that radical shift, although here in Las Vegas, I had noticed some nudging. Cass Sunstein's book, I think it was, or one of the others, where they basically were starting to nudge us towards a more violent, more aggressive, more coercive form of enforcement that had more dangerous aspects that I observed being very dangerous to liberty and freedom. You know, yes, there are bad people out there. There's no doubt about that. And those you know, we certainly need to keep the rest of us safe from. However, to presume that everybody is a terrorist threat and that everybody you stop, you're in fear for your life from, although it might be a safer position, it has no basis or substance to support it. The bulk of Americans are peaceful, friendly people. They think well of their law enforcement community and their public servants, firemen and policemen and doctors and even attorneys. You know, right. Although there may not be any actual basis for that, when you do your due diligence, and it may be a misplaced trust, trust me, I think we've had some jokes relating to what that term actually means in Yiddish, but it nevertheless, if we don't inform ourselves, we can think everything's okay, but things are radically shifting and changing before our eyes, and it's hard for most people not to notice that there are something going on. They may not know what it is, but they know something evil this way comes.
And of course, both of the political parties blame the other political party, so they keep us in two different camps, fighting something that doesn't exist when it's actually has infested both parties.
Well, that's the Hegelian dialectic, controlled opposition, the false right. paradigm, false choice. It's really two wings of the same dirty bird. Both
sure.
is opposing sides when they're both doing the same thing. We haven't seen
right.
much change from the Republicrats or Republicans to the Demoncons. It's just a little softer form with Republicans, and they're still going down the agenda of the New World Order for America. But that's very dangerous.
I've often said that the Democrats are Marxist, whereas the Republicans are more Zionist. But it's really the same road, the same roadmap, same set of rules, same set of. And they probably go out and drink after they have some sort of big meeting and cheer each other on.
Oh, you like
certainly
the Bohemian Grove?
Yeah, like the Bohemian Grove. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I know
it is.
There are people that question whether that is an actual place, but it actually is. And they actually do the things that they say they do. Oh, okay. Should we take a caller? Let's take Kathy in Missouri.
Hi, Chris. I just wanted to say that I knew you were in jail because I paid attention, and I heard you kind of get a little bit lectured and stuff one afternoon on a show on RBN, and I remember thinking, man, we're not sticking together. You know what I mean? Whether I agree with you or whether I even understand everything you get into is not relevant. And I knew you were in there, and I prayed for you diligently. And just the fact, and Deanna, don't take this personal, I'm really speaking to the big picture, because Deanna didn't even know you were in jail, that validates what I said, okay? And I called half an hour ago, and it rang and no one answered. And this is the same comment I was going to say then, but when I heard and no one answered, when I heard Deanna say she didn't even know you had been through that, I thought, man, we've got to do a better job supporting people, whether or not I agree with you or I even understand it all. You understand me? And I think, RBN, we should basically step up to the game. When people are suffering and you're a common, regular caller, we need to do a better job. So I just want to let you know that. And I just don't know if we can create something where we could do a better job supporting each other when we're going through trials. But I was kind of sad to hear she didn't even know. So we've got to communicate better. And I felt compassion that day you got berated. I'm not sure if you know what I'm talking about, but I remember hearing some guy go off on you. And I was like, oh, my God, it's like blaming the victim. So I just wanted to tell you that I had those thoughts.
Well,
to that point, Kathy, first, I thank you so very much for caring enough to call and sharing what you observed and for your empathy and sympathy that you expressed for me. I do want to send out a special thank you to all the listeners of RBN and the other stations that I've contributed. When I made those calls from outside the Lakes Crossing Center, from inside the Lakes Crossing Center, based upon others that were listeners that called in and helped, that was very critical in getting me out of there in 30 days. 30 days is a very short time to go to a so-called mental health care facility to be analyzed and qualified whether you're competent or not. But thankfully, because of the outside pressure from Truth Media Liberty stations, I was released in about 30 days and deemed to be competent by my adversaries, and they were about as anxious to get me out of there as I was to get out of there. And I thank and love and appreciate every one of you for all the efforts that everybody with RBN and other stations did.
Oh, my gosh. Now, when specifically were you there?
Let's see here. They first locked me up December 20th to January the 31st. And then I went back in, I think it was April to the end of May.
And what year?
It was May to July of 2007. I went in 2017. I was out in 2018. And so I was in 31 days the first time and 30 days the second time, 31 days in the local justice center and maximum security. And, of course, the Lakes Crossing Center in Sparks, Nevada, is a high security or maximum security mental health care so-called facility.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea.
Well, you know, I thank the Creator for giving me the power and the strength to endure. And, you know, there were some good people in there that were victimized of political pro se execution like myself. You know, whatever the legal system is weaponized against we the people as it here is in Nevada and Clark County specifically, when you have these nepotistic or marital relations violating the separation of powers doctrine, whenever you had the Clark County Commission chairman, Steve Sisolak's daughter, Ashley Sisolak, secretly posing as my pretender defender, waiving my right without my knowledge, acquiescence, or consent, that is an egregious abuse of defense discretion. That is a violation of professional rules of conduct, one, to act in good faith without deceit. And really, that's grounds for sanctions against that attorney. And when you understand that she works under the auspices of the Pro Bono Public Defender Office, which is under Steve Wolfson, the chief attorney's survey, through one of his assistant DAs, it creates a conspiracy between the county commission, the district attorney's office, and the judiciary to violate rights. And this is why this information on eminent domain is so dangerous, because it points out there's a final case here, number four on the list, I think is particularly artful in the way the Supreme Court delineates this. And if you're interested, I'll share it with your listeners now.
Go ahead.
This is Salinas versus U.S., S-L-I-E-S-L-S-A-L-I-N-A-S, pardon my stumbling, versus U.S., 118 Supreme Court 469 from 1997. This is fairly new and active law. Interpretive canon is not licensed for judiciary to rewrite language enacted by the legislature. Predominant elements in substantive racketeer-influenced incorporation organizations act RICO violations are 1, conduct, 2, of enterprise, 3, through a pattern, practice, and custom of racketeering activity. 18 U.S.C. 1962 parenthetical C, racketeering-influenced corporations organizations act RICO conspiracy conviction does not require an overt or a specific act. Under 1962D, if conspirators have a plan which calls for some conspirators to perpetrate a crime and others to provide support, supporters are as guilty as perpetrators. Conspiracy may exist and be punished whether or not substantive crime ensues. For conspiracy is a distinct evil, dangerous to the public, and so punishable in itself. Judges and cities are forbidden to rewrite language enacted by the legislature. They are forbidden to even think about using the courts to uphold bogus, fabricated charges for a hot pursuit of revenue or revenue, moving it from their pocket to your pocket.
Okay.
By their conduct, and I put in ultra-virus bad acts conduct,
right,
or falsely representing the character, amount, or legal status of any debt participants, violate FDCPA, CFPA, the Consumer Financial Protection Act, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, 15 U.S.C. Section 1692 E2 and A, and become principals in a pattern of racketeering by putting false liens or debts or credit records without verifying the liens or debts were legally valid.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this is, and then in the B section down here, one versus Friga, again talking about racketeering, it does not require proof of the individual defendant participated personally or agreed to participate personally in two predicate offenses. Rather, the conspiracy must contemplate the commission of two predicate acts by one or more of its members. More than two predicate acts occur when private individuals conspire with public employees to violate state and federal law by restricting property ownership without just compensation in furtherance of a racketeering scheme or artifice, which is denial of our honest government services and theft under color of law. Therefore, the county or the limited liability corporation is the municipality upon which the liability is imposed for conduct constituting RICO conspiracy through fraud and deceit to effect takings without due process and without just compensation, which is theft under color of law. The county needs to remember that judicial officers who went to jail in the Friga case for operating the county courts as a racketeering enterprise, the $42 million that went back into Uncle Sam's treasury as fruits of a racketeering enterprise, and needs to remember the 1,500 crooked employees who used to work for the DMV and took bribes to do favors and manufacture fake licenses for friends.
Wow.
I think that could have been here in Las Vegas, because we had a similar situation of aliens or migrants working in the DMV who were giving their countrymen special privileges and access to false license documents, and now they've moved them out of the state, so we're getting to pay for what we used to do here locally, the out-of-state interest, supposedly to make it more trustworthy, though I'm not sure.
Okay, Renee, we haven't heard from you for a long
time. Hi, Renee.
Yeah, hi. Y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, well, you know, Chris, you're exhibit A that there's a problem. Anybody who has been listening to this type of radio and listening to Chris call in for years knows that he is an intelligent, articulate, very stable man. And for how corrupt is a system where they can, the field of psychiatry and a just legal system can commit someone like him, every person should be terrified, okay? Because there's a lot less people who cannot express themselves as well as Chris can, okay? So the thing is, and he is so right, because I've had the personal experiences. The thing is, people love these
hey,
people.
Folks, we do have to go to a quick 3-minute break, and we'll hold you over the break, okay? We'll be right
okay.
back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and I understand there is another caller. But anyway,
hello.
A caller from, yes, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Did we lose Renee?
Oh, no.
Oh, here I am. I'm here.
Okay, Renee. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. I feel in many ways a lot of people have gotten diverted. You know, Patriot Radio used to understand our biggest threat was from those with power. We heard routinely how power corrupts. We understood the dangers of the Anglo-American Empire and stuff like that. And the thing is, I understand, like Chris, because I've been caught in this trap also, that when these people get their hands on you, I've literally pushed evidence on a table toward a cop, and he acted like there was anthrax on the paper. Another one, I literally stuck the evidence in his hand, never heard from him again. The thing is, if you have evidence of a crime, particularly of a person in government, like with RICO, like he said, you can't get these people to do anything about it. Too many people have diverted us into worrying about little brown people or the black people or the Muslims are people that are really basically the field slaves in this. And really the biggest danger to us comes from the overseers and the house slaves who make up part of the middle class. One of those little brown people that came over the border, I'm sure one of the people that came and picked up Chris and put him in a cage, okay? Too many people have a bias where they don't see that their biggest threat is from a part of the middle class. There was a robber baron years ago, last name Gould, and he's famous for a quote. He said, "I could hire half the working class to kill the other half."
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in a way, they've hired half the working class to be overseers and house slaves and gatekeepers to rule the rest of us. And this is the biggest danger to us, not the danger so many people are focusing on. And only, I guess Chris and I understand this because these people have, you know, wreaked havoc on our lives. And so we don't, I don't get sidetracked by the little people anymore. I really don't, and I hate to see so many people that waste our time doing this, because Chris, like I said, you're exhibit A, that there's no way this should have happened to you. Too many people have heard you, and I don't know how, it shows how corrupt it could be that they could do this to a man like you. Like I say, if they can do it to Chris, you better remember they can do it to anybody, and it's not the little people coming over the border that did this to Chris.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
They did it to Trump, they did it to LaVoy Finicum, they did it to Clive and Bundy and the Bundy family, and Tom LaCavera and me. So nobody's safe. These criminals run the government.
All righty.
Well, yes, and the thing is, like I say, too many people, it's a bias that we have to tend to not strike up, or those up in the middle, the group we least like to strike out at, are those in the middle class with us, because, oh, oops, it's my brother-in-law I play golf with, oh, oops, it's my sister at the Thanksgiving table, so we will tend to kick down, or maybe strike up at people we'll never meet, but we avoid the people who work for those people, who are actually the ones who will follow orders to protect their livelihood, those are the people who are the most dangerous to you.
Okay. Renee, we're going to cut you loose because I think we have another caller before Chris leaves us.
Miranda, thank you so much, Renee, for your comments.
Yes, thank you. Laura?
Okay. Hello. Good afternoon. I wanted to thank Deanna for having Chris on her show. It's absolutely fantastic. And I want to thank Chris for coming on the program and for going on countless other programs. He has such a massive, in-depth amount of research that he bases all of his facts on. And I just wanted to say thank you this afternoon to both of you, and especially to Chris, who has tried so hard to help so many people when they have reached out to him. So that's all I had to say today.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for saying it.
Thanks very much.
Yes.
So, Deanna, well, this is the
report. Chris, thank you so much for being on the program. We need to do this again. Okay, take care.
Donate it again.
Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.